You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Today is 11/24/21. We're getting to the end of November and the end of the year. And if you haven't thought about your taxes yet, you better start thinking about it now. We're working on trusts right now, me and my associates. It's something we'll be talking about more later. A lot of benefits there, taxation, asset protection, inheritance, things like that, estate planning that you need to know about. So if you got a question about trust, shoot me an email, kl@carrielutz.com. Right now, though, we are talking about what's happening in the world here with trade, with our deficit, all of these things. And we are really pleased to have with us Kenneth Raposa. Kenneth, you're an industry analyst with the Coalition for Prosperous America. And that's a think tank and a organization that really is seeking to advance American manufacturing around the world. Kenneth, it's great to have you on. We've had a number of your associates on the show over the years. And well, hey, when we look at what's going on now with the trade deficit, supply chain, all these things, these are issues that radically affect your membership as well as every person in the country. We're heading towards a $1 trillion deficit. But you know what they say, $1 trillion isn't what it used to be, right?
You're right. Thanks for having me on, Kerry. Yeah, $1 trillion isn't what it used to be. To put that into perspective, because a lot of people think of deficits and they go, oh, boring, right? So if you think of it like this, so of course the U.S. imports a lot of things because we're the biggest economy in the world. We don't make everything, obviously. We're not going to make everything, obviously. That's fine. But that $1 trillion, most of it coming from Asia, Europe, and Mexico, and Asia being China. Let's say you just had a third of that was made here. A third of it, 20%. That's hundreds of billions of dollars of those things that are made here. So that's just more jobs. That's a stronger middle class. That's, you're not going to upstate New York or areas in Oklahoma. That's just like bombed out ghost towns of yesteryear. And you have a more cohesive society. Instead, what we've been doing for many years is, thanks to our multinational corporations, is that American growth has been an Asian jobs program. So in one way, to look at the $1 trillion deficit, which is coming, it's a good deficit, that is the size of the entirety of the Mexican economy, right? So Mexico's economic output is about $1.4 trillion. We'll end the year with about a $1.2 trillion goods deficit. So we're importing almost, in essence, the entirety of the Mexican economy. That's how you can look at it.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, that's a loss of tons of jobs. It's not good for the national security of the country. A lot of issues involved with this, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's national security. It depends on what item it is. I mean, if we're importing, you know, Joanne fabrics or Christmas decorations, it's probably not a national security issue. But if you're importing certain things like metals that go into, you know, making magnets for GPS systems on a fighter plane from China, or if you're importing all of your solar panels from China, and we're going to supposedly be a solar, you know, pretty much a majority solar-powered nation if Biden gets his way by 2040, which will probably never happen.
There.
But yeah, good luck with
there.
That. You know, then it's a national security issue. You don't want to go from being relative fossil fuel independent to being like dependent on Chinese solar panels and Chinese wind. Well, China's not a big wind manufacturer yet for the U.S. They're getting there. Europe's the biggest, but China will eat their lunch pretty soon.
Yeah, no doubt. So obviously, this is important. It's really important to the future of the country, and important to workers, important to the world, really, isn't it?
Well, look, I don't think France, I don't think Germany cares about the United States trade deficit. They love it. They want to sell us more Mercedes, more, you know what I mean? They want to sell more pharmaceutical drugs, right, to the United States. So they don't care. You know, Germany is one of our biggest trade deficits, right? They're sort of the China of Europe, actually, with their trade policy, which is austerity at home. So people don't really have a lot of money. They're not really a consumer economy like we are here. And all the goods, all the subsidies, all the whatever free land to the big multinationals, so they could just dump all that stuff. Not dump, dump is the wrong word, but they could just sell all that stuff to the United States, and certainly they do that. But, you know, again, like my analogy of the deficit, right, trade deficit, and comparing it to the Mexican economy, I think that's really an easy, simple way to think of it in a fast way, right? Because think of all, let's say, just wipe out half of the Mexican labor force, just wipe them out. That's what you're doing when you're importing all this stuff, right? Because you're importing the entirety of the Mexican economy in $1.1 trillion, right? You're importing the entirety of that. That's what Mexico produces. You imported all of it. So Mexico doesn't produce things by robots or by pixie dust. You have to make it. So people have to grow it, whatever. So if all those people are out of work, right, all those Americans are not doing that, you could say, in theory, right, that's the equivalent of the economies of scale that you're losing by importing all those things, which is bad for the United States, of course. You know, some people who would say that, probably this back, you can go back to the 90s, right, with Ross Perot. Remember his anti-NAFTA stuff with the great big sucking sound?
And he was
so
right.
It goes back to the 90s. It goes back to the 90s when, you know, there was a popular movement in the United States that began then, and Ross Perot certainly was the benefactor of that. He certainly rose in the polls because of that. And the argument was that people watching their jobs go bye-bye, and they led to what? A lot of social unrest. Well, fast forward to 2016, and you get Trump. Well, why was Trump elected? Well, because Hillary was a terrible candidate, for one. A lot of people didn't like her. Even liberals didn't like her. But he ran on this Make America Great Again strategy, Make America Great Again policy, which was to make things in the United States. Let's just not work it. Let's just not be Uber drivers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or podcasters, for that matter, like myself, will be a nation of YouTubers and podcasters, right?
Yeah, well, that'd be fine if you can make a living at it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the problem. Not all of us can. I'm really fortunate in that regard. But I don't kid myself. We have a need for manufacturing industry. You got to be able to make stuff, because otherwise, you know, where's that going to leave us if we can't make anything, right?
Yeah, but not only that, right? It's like this. Like, okay, so you remember back in the day, so you hear the comment of, you know, learn to code. You know, you lost your job and don't want to work with us. In General Motors, you know, we're going to make a widget in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Instead. Okay, fine. So you could learn to code. Well, you know, I think I'm myself. I'm a pretty smart guy. I have my master's degree. I'm old enough to, you know, I've been around the world. I know what I'm doing. I have no idea how to code. Not only do I have no idea how to code, I have negative 100 interest in learning how to code. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I imagine that most people are like me. So maybe you're like 20 years old, or 21 years old, and you know you're a C student. You're a C student in high school, right? And I don't want to go to community college. I'm not going to take math. I'm not going to take biology. I don't like biology. So what am I going to do? I can learn a trade. I can get a job. If those jobs are gone, well, what are you going to do from then? What are you going to do from there? You're going to go work at like Popeyes?
Yeah.
I mean, Popeyes is great if you're a teenager and you need a part-time job, or it's even great if it's a franchise and you own it. But when you're like 23, 24, 25 years old, you're doing that. I don't know. I think that you kind of feel like I'm missing something here.
Yeah.
So the trade, manufacturing, you know, it's a big community set up, right? You're working with a lot of people your age. You know, people have been in manufacturing for like years. You know, sometimes you're working in family businesses. So it's more of a community. It's just a good way. Look, how did the United States become a superpower, right? And look at areas like anywhere in the country in the 30s, 40s, 50s, where they made clothes, you know, where I live in Massachusetts and near Fall River, Massachusetts, where they were a textile power, where they made clothes. It was a good life. And now you go to that part of Massachusetts, and it's just destitute.
I know.
And that's like 30 years later, you know, it's a generation later, just gone. It's over.
Hey.
It's coming back because of automation and so on, but it's not like it wasn't the heyday was the 50s. Why? Because it was manufacturing. You know, my grandfather, you know, made clothes, made suits for a living.
Right.
I mean, you know, this is, you know, why? Well, because he didn't learn to code. You know, not that he didn't learn to code, but he wasn't a scientist. He wasn't a doctor. He wasn't a lawyer. He wasn't a school teacher. He worked behind a sewing machine.
Yeah. Yep. I gotcha. And I understand there's definitely a need for all this, and we have to be able to reset our priorities. But, it doesn't look like the current administration, and not to get political, but it's just a fact. They're not really focused on this, are they?
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Goldterra Resource Corp is a gold exploration company that has assembled a highly prospective district-scale land position on the doorstep of the city of Yellowknife in Canada's Northwest Territories. Goldterra is currently focused on expanding and delineating gold resources at the company's Yellowknife City Gold Project with a goal of discovering over 5 million ounces. With ready access to infrastructure and multiple high-grade gold discoveries, Goldterra is on track to re-establishing Yellowknife as one of the premier gold mining districts in Canada. Goldterra trades as YGT in Toronto and YGTFF on the OTC. For more information, go to goldterracorp.com. That's goldterracorp.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Well, they say they're focused on it, right? And I could look at some things. Let's look at one of the bills that just passed. So the infrastructure bill that just passed, and there was one thing in there, let's say, I remember off the top of my head, which was a clause, which is a provision in there called Make PPE, which stands for personal protection equipment. This is like masks and hospital gowns, right? Make it in the United States, right? So then you would have money that would go to, let's say, I was a clothing manufacturer, or I made, whatever it is, thread, whatever it was, right? We actually have people in the United States who make those things, companies that make that. Now I can get money from the government, and I can make hospital gowns and masks. I can sort of have that as a nice little side business, so I could keep that in storage and, to sell to hospitals. So, that money did go to that part of that there is money in the infrastructure bill for that. So there are things like that, and that the Biden administration at least keep locals in mind. But on one hand, it's always like a one step forward, one step back thing. I think that's the best way to describe it, right? So yeah, you have that. And then on the other hand, you take it away in another way. You take it away by, either through regulation, or you take it away through crazy taxation for small businesses, or maybe on the other hand, make it easier for the big businesses who are going to buy those products to really source from overseas. So they're not going to buy it from you anyway. So it becomes, It's really a one step forward, one step back thing, But I do think that the Biden administration, I think that they do care, at least they say they do, about, U.S. manufacturing and building it up here. I think they know. I think Congress definitely knows. Say what you will about Congress. I sit in on a lot of hearings, and a lot of it is fluff. A lot of it is fluff. They don't do what they say. But they do talk a good game a lot of times. And there's a few guys that you can listen to and you go, no, this guy, this senator doesn't get it. This congressman, they're way out in left field somewhere. But a lot of people do, even people that you'd be surprised that you think, oh man, this guy's off his rocker. But you listen to him speak in Senate hearings, you go, yeah, this guy, I get it. If you're blindfolded, like you're like the masked singer, you didn't know the voice, you didn't know who was speaking. You'd say, yes, I agree with that guy. The mask comes off, you say, no, I hate that person. But they do care. They do say they do want the same thing that you want. The problem is these guys are lobbied on a daily basis by people who are, they're globalists, right? They're not interested in you. They don't share the same interests as you. They consider the United States is no different than if you looked at a map. It's Rhode Island on planet Earth. It's the state Rhode Island on planet Earth, and China is another state, whatever, and it's all run by the big boys. So that's how they view it. So, if you're dealing against that, you're dealing with the pushback from that very powerful interests, right? So
sure. No, I can see that. So in any event, but they've done some things right, which is really a great thing to hear, because we tend to think of just totally incompetence prevailing in Washington, right? Oftentimes.
Oh, absolutely. And rightfully so. I mean, a lot of these guys deserve our scorn,
Yes. Yeah, certainly that's the case. For the year ahead, what's going to happen here with this trade deficit? Because there's going to come a point where they have too many of our dollars. They're just not going to want anymore, right?
Well, that's an interesting topic, because Well, who's they, right? So they
the rest
could be
of the world.
Mexico. Mexico definitely likes our dollars. China probably doesn't like it for geopolitical reasons. They see it as a security risk. Yeah. Europe is perfectly fine with it. And again, you know, European Union, think about this for a sec. Think about this. So a lot of people will say, oh, man, China, well, yeah, it's all cheap labor, all cheap in China. So, you know, they could dump the chemicals down a river and so on. They don't care. But the Europeans aren't doing that. The Europeans aren't dumping chemicals down a river. They're more strict than we are. And our deficit with them is like, I think it's probably China number one. It's either European Union or Mexico number two, and the European Union a close third, right? So here's these are the richest countries in the world, right? So and we're buying more from them than they buy from us. And of course, you could say, well, these are small countries, blah blah blah. But again, we have deficits with countries who are very rich, very powerful, big ones, big deficits, and they're they're fine with keeping the dollar, I think, in Europe. But again, you can look at it, and we could argue that what's going on behind closed doors right now is that what we hear is a lot of central banks are talking about digital currency, and then that opens up a whole new can of worms. Of more centralized control of the economy. So will that eventually get rid of the dollar? Yeah, probably. Maybe even in our lifetimes, you know, things move really fast.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, you know, it is what it is. What are we going to do?
Sometimes things get replaced and you kind of miss it, and it's okay. It's okay if you know, oh, I like my little Ford and now I don't have a Ford. I got a Chevy. But if I have to buy a Chevy, you know, pretty much if I don't buy the Chevy, I can't get anywhere. Well, that's not really a choice anymore, right? So what I think the battle of our time is, and China certainly represents this, is centralization versus decentralization. The United States has always been a model of decentralization, right? The states have power, right? Florida can say, no, I'm not going to do what Washington tells me. But, you know, I don't think you can do that in Germany. I don't think, like, you know, different states in Germany can say, no, I'm not going to listen to Merkel. I don't think that works. It doesn't really work like that. So, you know, you have a battle in our fingertips, which is centralization, which is represented by the China model, and decentralization, which is represented by the U.S. model. And I think that's really the biggest thing to look for in 2022, is where that battle continues. You know, in Europe, we're seeing is becoming more of a centralized control system, and they're selling it to their people as, you know, well, we're diverse and inclusive, and we celebrate Pride Month, so it must be good. And the United States, a lot of times, they follow along. They think Europe is the way, right? They're sophisticated. They're a sophisticated vaccinated crowd, so to speak, to use what we heard about about the Obama birthday party in Martha's Vineyard. So I think that's the battle of our time, really. What the government does with it depends on who's in Washington, depends on what happens in the midterms as well. But right now, the biggest thing to watch, I think, from where I am at CPA, and I think some of your listeners will be interested in this too, because I'm sure your listeners are probably politically minded, politically aware. They probably hear about climate change issues and, you know, China, of course, the issues at top of mind. They're always on the evening news and, you know, on online news sites all the time. And so China and a lot of the big multinational, you know, importers of energy, especially solar in this case, are looking to remove the Trump-era solar tariffs. Now, if that happens, that would be the massive crack in the Trump-era trade war against China. Because for now, Biden has kept on that path. He's shown some cracks in it recently, but he hasn't removed anything. He's weakened one thing, which was a ban on this one Chinese company from selling material that goes into making solar panels. That company was banned. Now that company's sort of banned, sort of not banned. But by the next February, I believe, we'll know whether or not China is going to win, and they're going to convince John Kerry, Mr. Captain Planet, to convince the White House to remove solar imports. And that would just flood the market with Chinese and Southeast Asian-made solar panels. And that would wipe out a lot of the companies in the United States that have been investing in this space because of the Trump-era tariffs. That would be the first sign. Any of your listeners who are thinking, yeah, Beijing, Biden, you know, Biden's been on the side of China, that would be the first crack. I mean, that would be a serious crack, a visible crack, where you would see that, okay, you know, Biden is looking to get rid of those safeguards against American manufacturers. That would be bad.
Got it. All right. Well, we got some things to think about here, to look forward to, and hope for the best. We might be seeing a change of legislative leadership in Washington, and that could definitely have an effect on whatever the game plan is for dealing with China. We want to find out more about Coalition for Prosperous America. Where do we find you? Where do we find more information about it?
Okay, so the think tank Prosperous America is just prosperousamerica.org. And then myself, I'm on Twitter, and my handle on Twitter would be at Brickbreaker, which B-R-I-C. That was my old Forbes, one of my Forbes days. That was my old Forbes handle. So I don't really do a lot. I go off on China and anything has to do with the centralization versus decentralization debate. I'm on it.
All right.
Good idea.
But you know what I'm saying. This is a crazy thing. So the... the website prosperousamerica.org. You can find Kenneth's work there as well as other guests that we've had on before. And appreciate you coming on. Any questions, comments, email kl@carrylutz.com. Visit the site financialsurvivalnetwork.com. And by all means, sign up for the newsletter. Kenneth, appreciate you coming on. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me on. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.